I wanna go where the moon shines bright.
Welcome everyone to episode 31 of the It Matters to Me podcast, a show that celebrates the random through one-on-one conversations with people and the passions that they pursue. Today, my guest is Mark Masters, author, comedian, and organizer of all things Vail Comedy. Mark is actually the very first guest to come back on the show, and I couldn't have been more excited to set this one up. It's been nearly a full year since he was first on, so there was plenty to catch up on. We get into how he crafts his routine and the often underappreciated work ethic that most stand-up comedians necessarily have, but then we also spend some time talking about this year's Vail Comedy Festival that he's organizing and why he takes so much pride in putting it on. Mark's not only a genuinely funny person, but his diligence to being a better comedian and positive attitude is simply inspiring. If you're going to be in Colorado May 27th through May 29th, I can't encourage you enough to come check out this year's Vail Comedy Festival. The passion that Mark puts into his art and work is unmistakable, and I can almost guarantee you that this is going to be a great time. I'll, of course, link to it in the show notes, but you can also find tickets and information at vailcomedyfestival.com. Okay, that's all from me for now. Let's get to it. Here's my talk with Mark Masters. Mark, welcome back to the show. First time I get to say that. How are you doing?
I'm awesome, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. You know, it's finally starting to like warm up, and I hate, you know, making a conversation about anything that has to do with weather, but like I am so thrilled that it's starting to finally warm up because as a runner, it is miserable for me in the winter months. But I'm doing good, man. Well, you're here as a repeat customer. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're gonna talk about some of the work that you're doing, and we obviously, or not obviously, but we're gonna talk about an upcoming comedy festival that you have going on. But before we get into that, for any listener who hasn't heard the first episode and this is your first introduction to you, we're gonna start out just like we did last time, and how we start out every episode, and it's by me asking, if I had the opportunity to embarrass you in front of all of our friends, let's say at your upcoming festival, I'm keynote speaker opening night, but I have to, of course, tell the most embarrassing stories about Mark Masters growing up. What kinds of stories would I tell?
Oh, growing up. Okay. Embarrassing stories growing up. I've clearly done my homework as I'm stalling for time here.
Embarrassing stories in general growing up are
well, you know, I'll tell you what, last week I slept in my car. That's not exactly something I brag about in all circles. That was, you know, in certain, definitely in Vail at the comedy festival up in Vail, that would be an embarrassment. Kind of a bummer too. It was in, you're talking about warm weather. It was in Phoenix. It was plenty hot in Phoenix. Let me tell you, it was steamy in that car. But I won't get into where I usually park my car for security reasons, but for reasons we won't get into, I was in a parking structure, like a garage, basically. And I was a little worried that like maybe a security guard or something would come give me some trouble. But I didn't have any trouble like that. But at 4:30 in the morning, somebody's car alarm went off and it went for like an hour. It was awful. It was like the worst thing. So I finally just got up and it kind of turned out pretty cool. They have these great mountains very close to the city in Phoenix. You run up them by the cactus and look right over the city, but it's so hot. They have these big signs everywhere that like, you will die if you don't bring water. Like death is imminent. Have water, have a plan, et cetera. And so because I got to start at like 5:45 in the morning, it was like actually kind of cool and kind of fun. So I don't know. Maybe sleep in my car or something. It's in my head right now. But
there's nothing embarrassing about that because I've been living semi out of a van for the past 8 months.
Oh, okay. It's pretty comfortable. I've gotten pretty good at it. I have a whole like platform and a bed, and I'm tall. I'm like 6'1". I just barely fit. I have to angle the legs a little bit, and yeah, I mean it works out great. And it's Subaru Outback. For security purposes, I won't say the type of the car. We can bleep that out later. I'm just kidding. You don't have to go back and edit that. There's in Colorado. Good luck finding me in a Subaru Outback. There's a zillion of them.
It's either a Subaru or a Toyota Tacoma.
Probably. Yeah, exactly. It's like, and the other thing is sometimes like on these road trips, like I just went Denver to, I stopped in Trinidad, Colorado. Shout out to Nathan Lund, great comedian down there. And then went to Santa Fe to do an open mic with Wayward Comedy. And then from there went to Phoenix. So this is all by car. And then from Phoenix, I drove to Vegas. Here's another life hack for the listeners in a second. Left my car in Las Vegas, flew to San Francisco to see some old friends and had a little vacation, flew back to San Francisco. Basically, I needed to kill like 4 days. Had a gig in Vegas. Thank goodness my car was still there. I had so many concerns about leaving my car in Las Vegas for, you know, that somebody's going to take the catalytic converter. It's going to get robbed. So somebody told me that you can park for free at the Venetian. I didn't really believe it, but I tried it. I pulled in. There's like no gate, no ticket, no nothing. I just pulled into a spot and walked over to the elevator and took a lift to the airport that cost like $10 and then came back 96 hours later. My car was still there and it cost nothing. It was incredible. I was shocked that it worked. And then I had a gig in Vegas and I drove from Vegas from Nevada through Utah back to Colorado. So I saw like six states in basically 6 days. And when my point is, when I go on these trips, getting a hotel, it's not always just about saving money. It's just like, it's a waste. If I'm only going to be in the hotel for like 6 hours, I'm basically going to like pull in. It takes more time to like bring my bag in and like get ready for actual bed in the hotel and check in and get the key and all that stuff, when I'm just going to be right back driving another 300 miles in like 6 or 7 hours, I might as well just sleep in the back of the car. That's what I tell myself, at least.
No, that makes sense because, you know, the times over over the winter when it was just like so unbelievably cold that not even like being in the van was reasonable, like to the point where I was concerned my laptop, laptop was going to freeze.
I have a new 32 degree rule. I have a chisel in my, like an ice scraper in my car for scraping off the inside of the windshield. Like, cause you steam up your car. I didn't know this was a thing, but I have to chisel up ice from the inside of the windshield. And now my new thing is if it's 32 degrees or colder, I get a hotel no matter what. I can't, I'm too old for that. Nobody can see me on this. I'm too old for that at this point.
Yeah. That's a good rule. Like I said, for me in the van, I've had, I've got this like $800-$900 lithium ion battery that my solar panel charges that my friend, correctly calls an $800 phone charger, because at the end of the day, the only thing I'm really charging is my phone and my laptop on it. And there's a way for me to monitor my battery in my van. Like I can actually see the voltage output. And when it gets so cold that like I can see it, the battery being incredibly erratic and jumping up and down, making me think like this thing might blow up. That's my limit. I'm like, okay, I need to get a hotel room.
Sure. And hotel might be an exaggeration. We're talking like a roadside motel. You know, there's clearly been a crime scene in the room recently. There's still some of the yellow tape up on some of the doors, you know, some fresh blood stains. It's you know, hotel might be an exaggeration, but an indoor space.
It's got walls.
Yes, exactly.
It keeps you from the elements. Yes. Awesome. Well, I think it's maybe been about a year since we last talked. So what has been going on for you? With COVID seemingly lifting on a lot of parts of the country, make clear for the listener that you're a line of work, you're a comedian. We're talking about gigs and traveling, mm-hmm. you're talking about doing that. So how has the past year treated you as far, it seems like you're traveling a lot. So I guess you're getting a lot of good work and getting back on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the pandemic, I moved Vail Comedy Show online, which was a lot of fun because I got to work with a lot of famous comedians and just, you know, you could have six people in six different states on a show, which very easily and affordably. And myself, I could do like I did comedy in Australia and Asia and all over the place and didn't have any of those travel expenses to get there. The Vail Comedy Show is back to in person. We've bounced around a little bit, but for the last 8 months, we've been at Bridge Street Bar in Vail Village. We've sold out every show for the last 8 months. It's been incredible. The crowds are awesome. The local community has been super supportive. People have actually booked vacations around the Vail Comedy Show. Like somebody from New Orleans flew to Colorado and had a vacation in Vail. And they went to VailComedyShow.com to see when the next monthly show was to make sure they were in town for a Vail Comedy Show. Because we're flying in. It's really cool. We used to, before the pandemic, we ran this as a free show. It was a lot of fun. We got a little bit of money from the bar, mostly Denver comics involved. Now we charge tickets. They start at $25. There's a much larger budget. And we fly in comics from New York City, LA. People have been on TV. They're outstanding shows. The bar is perfect for a comedy show. It's got low ceilings. It's dark. There's an actual stage. The sound system's terrific because it's a music bar. We have a bunch of padded chairs that they bought. They're a great partner to us. They bought all these chairs and they leave them in a closet 30 out of 31 days every month. And then one night a month, we drag out these chairs and we have a kick-ass comedy show. And then all the chairs go back into this closet. So that's been really fun now that we're kind of post-COVID. And then the comedy festival, which we'll talk about in a little bit. I do want to mention, though, that I still do tonight. We're recording this on a Friday. Every Friday, 6 p.m. Mountain, I do a 30-minute online comedy show with comics from all over the world. Tonight, we got North Dakota, Vermont, Washington, D.C., can't remember the other two off the top of my head, but, you know, a bunch of comics on Comedy Test Kitchen. It's free. People watch it from all over and we'll chat in the YouTube live chat. And it's different. You know, like I would say I have a preference for in-person comedy, but the online stuff is still, there are advantages to it and it's fun and I get to meet a lot of people. And so.
And what are those advantages? Because that's definitely something, you know, obviously with what COVID, it was, you know, in person was impossible at times and people were just making things work. But yeah, but what are some of the advantages of doing it online and what kind of experience can someone expect to, because I feel like going to a comedy show, it's kind of, part of the joy of a comedy show is like you're in a crowd laughing with a crowd. Like, is there a way to like all laugh together?
Okay. So the advantages, we'll break it down into the performer versus the audience. Cause I think there's more for the performer than there is for the audience. And it's a mixed bag for both. But for the performer's perspective, like right now we're recording this online. You have no idea if I'm wearing pants. You have no idea like if I commuted from 6 feet away or 100 miles away. But the reality is whenever I do an online gig and some of them pay pretty well, sometimes I just walk from the kitchen to a little studio I have in my closet and that's the whole commute. And as somebody who like I drove to Phoenix, Arizona from Denver, listeners can pause and see how many miles and hours that is. That was for an unpaid comedy club spot. It was great. The comedy club was packed. It was a beautiful comedy club. I'm excited to get work there in the future, but it's kind of ridiculous from a business perspective, the things comedians will do. I would way rather do an online spot than drive, you know, and sleep in my car overnight and have to, you know, figure out how to leave my car in Vegas and invent a vacation to kill 5 days. And there's all kinds of logistical headaches with the in-person stuff. Online is so much easier. It's so much easier from just a travel perspective. So that's a huge advantage. There's a networking advantage as well. Just all the comics, you know, I've had maybe 400 comedians on Comedy Test Kitchen. We're coming up on our 100th show here in a few weeks. And so everywhere I go, I run into people that I've worked with on Comedy Test Kitchen. Or, you know, this summer right now, I'm figuring out a little run where I'm doing a show in Rochester, Minnesota. The next night, I'm doing Duluth, Minnesota. I've never even heard of these places. I've never been to Minnesota, but I've worked with five or six comedians from Minnesota because of Comedy Test Kitchen. And I can just email them and say, hey, I'm coming out. I have gigs Thursday night, Friday night. Can you help me get anything Saturday night or Wednesday night so I can extend the trip and make it worth the travel? So that's been a huge advantage for me. And it works in the opposite direction as well, of course. Like now all these comics know me. They reach out to me when they need something, which feels good. And I like to lift everybody up. So that's been helpful. Also for the festival, you know, which we'll get into a little bit later, like getting as a first year event, it's hard to get people to know about you. And I have an audience now from both the audience to Comedy Test Kitchen because I run this show regularly, which is another advantage. In-person gigs can be very hit or miss and erratic in terms of scheduling. They're like the battery in your van. But the online stuff is more like your house electricity. It's every Friday, 6 p.m. Mountain. It never stops. It's a 30-minute show. It's very quick, in and out. And so I have to write material every week for this show. And that's huge for me. That's a big, it's a motivator for me to create new content and new material. And some of that material eventually gets on stage in front of live audiences.
And so, how do you create new material? Or is that like a taboo question to ask?
No, it's fine. I wish I knew the answer. The real question is, how do you create material that works well? I wish my hit rate was higher. The answer is volume. I make it up in volume. I just create, I've been in the last week, I maybe drove 30 plus hours. And so I have a notebook and a pen and a phone nearby that I can record voice memos. And I'll think of silly things like I was trying to think about jokes about morning breath the other day. And I came up with like six jokes about morning breath, and I'll try some of them on Comedy Test Kitchen tonight. And, you know, maybe one of them will be good enough to do at an in-person mic or a low stakes showcase. And eventually the jokes get good enough to be used for paid work. And a lot of times some of these jokes, they'll be okay. They won't be like, some of them are terrible and they'll never see the light. You know, I think they're going to be funny and they just aren't. For whatever reason, you know, the audience doesn't like them or they just weren't funny to start with. But some of them are, as you get further and further along, if anybody here listening to this wants to become a stand-up comedian, it's very frustrating in the beginning to create material because you don't have a big reservoir to work from. But the cool thing, if you stay at it and you perform as many nights as you can and write every day, eventually, like 2+ years in, maybe you're telling a joke about pine trees and there was a joke you did about a baseball bat a long time ago and it never really worked, but you can pretend that the pine tree turns into a baseball bat and you can just use that quick one-liner in there. It's like fuel on the fire. It's like you're adding more funny beats to a story, and those old jokes, you recycle the like mediocre jokes. They're not good enough to stand. Mediocre is the wrong word. Let's call them good. You take the good jokes, a lot of little good jokes, and you turn them into a great bit. So if you string them all together, then you have something great.
I think like everybody out there, I've thought about like attending an open mic night. And just seeing what I think I'm funny sometimes. It's like, no, yeah. You're not. Like, you've got people.
Well,
both
things can be true. Mm-hmm. You can be funny and you can be unsuccessful on stage as a stand-up comedian. Because when you're funny, you're with your friends and family and you have a shared history and a context. And you can just say something like, oh my gosh, Aunt Lindsay is drinking red Kool-Aid. And for whatever reason, that's hilarious to the people around you because they know something about red Kool-Aid and they know something about Aunt Lindsay and they don't need any setup. But a stand-up comedian needs to provide all the setup ahead of time, unless they're doing topical jokes, you know, politics or something in the news. Yeah. But generally, you need to do something that's universally relatable. And trust me, I've failed so hard at telling jokes that do great in Denver and Vail, Colorado. And then I go to middle of nowhere, North Dakota, and I just, nobody's heard of NPR. A room full of 40 people, zero have heard of NPR. And I require people to know that NPR is kind of slow and boring sometimes to laugh at my joke. If they don't even know what NPR is, the joke just doesn't work. And so it's not easy. It takes a lot of work. Yeah. But.
Well, yeah. I mean, to say that it takes a lot of work, that's one thing I do know about comedians. And it's like, you know, you just said that, like, you drove from Denver to Phoenix. And I've done that drive over, it took me well over a week, but I would say that's it. If you were to drive straight through, that's like a 16-hour drive or something, I think.
Yeah, I did it in 2 days, basically. I broke it up into two chunks.
Man, I mean, that's something I respect so much about, you know, stand-up comedians, especially when it seems like they're first starting out. And I think you're probably past this point, but you're obviously still working hard. But it's just like the amount of work that y'all put in to your craft. And so how, I guess, maybe it's hard to quantify, but like, how many hours a week are you putting into your routine?
Well, in a sense, you're always thinking about your routine. Like, I don't mean to be rude, but if I think of a joke while I'm talking to you right now, I will pull out my phone and write down this little nugget about whatever. Cause I won't, it's amazing when you're getting started, how you think, oh, I'm going to remember that. Like, you're in bed, it's 2 a.m. and you think of something funny about squirrels. And then the next morning, all you can remember is there was some animal and you can't remember. And of course you always fear the worst, that this was the best joke ever. And then the real funny thing is, like, 2 days later when you remember the squirrel thing and you're like, that was not that great an idea. Why was I so excited about that? but it, you know, so I'm always trying to come up with, you know, I'm living life, right? And you go out and you live life and things just happen to you while you're out living life. And that's why I like going on the road. So I get so much material when I'm on the road, meeting new people, having new experiences. I didn't really answer your question objectively. I would say it varies wildly, but I think 40 hours is not a stretch in between performing and getting ready for performances. And, you know, nowadays I'm not the best at this. I'm kind of averse to social media, but with a festival, I've definitely become more involved with it because it's a necessity, you know, creating content. And actual physical writing, you know, I try and write at least an hour a day, just, you know, and again, a lot of it is, it's garbage. It's not good. It's nothing I'm ever going to save, but it's like, you gotta get the bad stuff out of your system. It's like a hose of water with a bunch of dirty water in it. And you got to get rid of all the dirty water, and somewhere there's going to be some clean water towards the end.
Yeah. It's, do you find yourself, like, when you're writing, do you personally put, I don't know, like, for me, I keep a journal every day. Okay. And I constantly have to remind myself when I'm writing a journal, like, no one's going to see this. Just write whatever is coming out. Like, just verbally vomit on this page to get things going. But it's so hard not to basically criticize the things that I'm writing that are only for me. And so do you have that same kind of, like, self-consciousness when you're writing, or do you just have to, like, will yourself to write whatever is coming to mind?
I think one of the superpowers of comedians, I'm not putting myself in this category of a good comedian, by the way. Many successful comedians will admit to you that they had a superpower of delusion. For a long time, they were deluded into thinking, even though everything they're creating is garbage, eventually it will become good, which is kind of the thesis. I wrote a book. I can't remember if we talked about it last time, but it's called Not Good Yet. And it's about getting started in comedy. And you have to be self-aware enough to know that it's bad, but you have to have this perverse kind of confidence to also just keep going and hope that eventually it will be good. And my favorite conversations with famous or successful comedians are the ones where they admit how bad they were early on in comedy, because because it gives me just a little glimmer of hope. You know, like on this road trip, I did great in Santa Fe and great in Phoenix. I ate a bag of bad words in Las Vegas. I had a 7-minute spot. I went up second. The crowd was not warmed up yet. It was tight. It was small. They didn't want to they were like glaring. I would say the predominant mood was glare. Like people were just glaring at me as I'm telling jokes that I know work that other people have laughed at. And you just have to fight through it and be a professional and live to fight another day.
Oh man, I don't mean to laugh at your expense, but I'm definitely laughing at the idea of you staying on stage and just everyone just glaring at you. I mean, that's just such an awkward feeling, I would imagine. But yeah, obviously not everything can be, you know, a banger of a joke.
I should say as well that it's my job to get them to laugh. So I failed in a respect. And what I probably should have done in that situation, what I was hoping for was to get some good tape out of it because there was a good filming system there. And so I was trying to stick to my routine. In retrospect, and because I had traveled so far to be there, I really like put that particular spot up on a pedestal. I probably should have veered off and talked about how the stage looked like an American Ninja Warrior set and talked about people in the audience and just kind of loosened up the crowd for the comics after me. So it's not the audience's fault. It's definitely there's an opportunity to improve there. That's how I know I can still get better is when I have humbling sets like that.
And how competitive is it amongst comedians? You know, you talked about, traveling, you know, to Duluth or, you know, traveling to all these different places and being able to rely on your network of friends and people that you've met along the way. Is there a sense of competition of like a zero sum game? Like, well, I can't help this person get this spot because if I do, then that means it's not a spot for me. Or is that,
I mean, that definitely happens.
Yeah.
I think every comedian, it's the same thing in every, type of work. Every aspect of life. There are people who are super competitive and look at things as a zero-sum game. And there are others who have a philosophy like I do that a rising tide lifts all boats. You know, if we can put on a good comedy show and people enjoy comedy, there's going to be more opportunities for everybody. You know, I'm at a point where I'm not making a living at comedy. So I feel like it's easy for me to not be super competitive about it. If I was paying my rent and eating, you know, solely based on income from comedy, I might have a different attitude. I might, there's a thing, there's a classic stand-up comedy joke about, you know, somebody telling something about a terrible gig, like the one in Vegas, the one where, you know, the people there who knew how they got there or why they're so upset and disappointed and, you know, this isn't that gig, but the sound was terrible and it took forever to get there and the parking was $100 and it was an unpaid gig. And then that's one comedian saying it to a second comedian and the second comedian's response is, who books that? You know, they always want, the second comedian always wants to know, how do I get that opportunity? It doesn't matter how terrible it was, they want that opportunity. And, you know, there's some comics that are generous with sharing information like that. And there are other comics that are very, you know, they covet that information. Having a booker's email address or their phone number is, you know, it's something, it's precious, you know, and it's something you can use year after year. And you don't want to, you have to be careful about who you send to bookers. I'm also a booker. I run a comedy show. I run a comedy festival now. I get a lot of inquiries from people who want stage time and who I can't give stage time to. So it can be frustrating if people give out my contact information willy-nilly. I don't have a good answer to that question. I would say at my level, it's supportive in the circle of comic friends I have. And especially with the Denver comedians, like we want everybody to do, we're kind of, there's like a tribalism thing So like people are competitive, but they're supportive of their scene, if that makes any sense. Like if there's an opportunity, I'm going to try and give it to a Denver comic over a Florida comic or whatever, you know? And there's definitely like a, you know, people in New York think their scene's better than LA. People in LA think their scene's better than New York. You know, there's Austin, Denver, Minneapolis. We're all, you know, who's got the best scene. So there's competition, but it's a fun competition. And definitely like when you're on a show, like I for sure want to do better than everybody else. Like there's no question about that. And it's not a spiteful thing. It's a prideful thing. And I just want the show to be great for everybody, for everybody in the audience. So
yeah. I can see that. Cause yeah, that means, you know, you doing your best means that hopefully the audience is having a good time. And yeah. And I support that sentiment of, you know, all the rising tide lifts all boats. You know, we were kind of talking before we hit record or kind of started this, like, you know, I recently got into base jumping, and then that, you know, there's a really tight knit community around base jumping that for, I would say, like appropriate reasons, you know, if I'm traveling around the country and I want to go jump something and I don't know anybody in that area, but I know other base jumpers who do know people in that area, you know, there's a little bit of like a vetting process, because the last thing that, you know, anybody wants is for some jackass to come in town and blow up their local like antenna or cliff or whatever, because they were being stupid and they end up, you know, hurting themselves and doing something like that. So I love the idea of now being a part of a community where I can travel to places, and it's like the sport is so meaningful to me and everyone that does it, that it's like all we want to do is share it with people. So that's why I support kind of your approach to like, hey, you know, this is something that brings fulfillment to a lot of people. And, you know, and you want to make sure that like, yeah, you're getting your work done, but you're also making sure that other people are also having a good time. So I appreciate that. I think we beat around the bush enough. Let's talk about the festival.
Tell
me all about it. When is it? Who's going to be there? What can people expect?
Yeah, so veilcomedyfestival.com. I'm contractually obligated to say that about 10 times. That's veilcomedyfestival.com. Everybody, pull it up right now. Beautiful website.
Is there a www or HTTP?
It's https://www. That's www.veilcomedyfestival.com. That's V as in Victor, V-A-I-L. The ski area, the destination resort town, one of the most beautiful places on earth. Why wouldn't you want to come to Vail, Colorado over Memorial Day weekend, May 27, May 28, May 29? 30 comedians from around the country are flying in from states like Alabama all the way to Washington. They're coming in. People have been on Late Night with Stephen Colbert. People who have been on Netflix, NBC, CBS, HBO. They'll all be in town in Vail. And it's going to be a very cozy, intimate comedy festival. I'm excited about that. I've been touring some of these venues. There are going to be some small, you know, like big star comedians, but small shows. You're going to be very close. Like, I was going to make a COVID comment, but I don't even want to. You're going to be close.
Moments pass. Don't worry.
Yes. You're going to be very close to people, at the festival. It's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, we have a ton of comics coming in. The idea of a comedy festival is not brand new. It's not even unique to comedy. You know, there are film festivals and all kinds of, I'm sure there are even base jumping festivals, or will be soon.
Boogies. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. So it's not new to have an event in Vail, Colorado. And it's not new to have an event over a holiday weekend, which Memorial Day weekend is, but this is all brand new to me. And I can't tell you how much I've learned. I'm really failing at everything as I put this together, but it looks like it's going to do really well. I'm really excited about it. We have a lot of buzz in the industry. We've invited a lot of industry people, Hollywood agents, executives at comedy album studios, people who own, you know, medium-sized comedy club chains, comedy club owners, national bookers. In the comedy community, we had several hundred comedians apply to be at the festival. So the way it works from a talent perspective is we have headliners. So if you go to the website right now, you can see all the headliners right at the top. And then we have some featured performers, including a street magician, which I'm really excited about. And here, talk about the learning curve. I had to get a permit. I had to go to like an 8 a.m. meeting at the Town of Vail City Council to get a permit for busking. What everybody knows is busking, but they actually call ambient entertainment. If you don't know what busking is, by the way, it's like talented panhandling. So if you go to like 16th Street Mall in Boulder and somebody's like swallowing fire, or they're juggling and they're also collecting money, or they're the people who do the flips, you know, you see that in big cities sometimes, or they're singing or whatever, that's busking. But in Vail, they don't call them tourists. They're called guests. They have all kinds of special language. They don't call it busking. They call it ambient entertainment. So we're going to have a magician wandering around, just doing tricks throughout the festival. And then we have a bunch of selection comedians, which means they applied to be in the festival. They submitted some tape of them performing somewhere. Some of it was good. Some of it was bad. And then there was a committee of people. So just as a rewind, you know, I'll ask myself my own question. Mark, like, what was the first thing you
just
did?
Take over this podcast.
Yeah, sure. Interviewing yourself. It's a one-way conversation. The best thing I did to start the festival was reach out for help from other people. And I talked to about a dozen people, maybe 8 or 9 of them run or have run comedy festivals. And, you know, like one person ran a big tech festival. Somebody else ran a different kind of festival, but still same basic idea, and just ask them basic questions like, what's the biggest mistake you made your first year? In your most recent festival, what's the best thing you did? You know, what kind of marketing or advertising things do you do? How do you ticket? How do you deal with event insurance? You know, all this kind of stuff. And I've learned so much from those conversations. And one of the best pieces of advice I got was, do not be involved in the selection process if you yourself are a comedian, which I'm a comedian, and I don't want the politics of somebody being upset at me because they applied to the festival and did not get in. And so we had a committee of reviewers, which I was not a part of, but there were comedy club employees, national bookers, comedy fans, a whole bunch of them, and they all had to watch at least 50 5-minute videos and score them across different, there was a whole rubric and a spreadsheet, and multiple people would watch each video, and then it just spit out a score. And I just took the top 30 people and said, congratulations, you're in the festival. And then I had to write a sad email to 150 plus people, which was pretty easy because the day before I wrote the email, I got rejected myself from a different comedy festival. So I was able to say right up top, I know how you're feeling right now. And I did everything I could to soften the blow. I offered them opportunities in other areas, encouraged them to come to the festival, and I would hook them up with a free pass. They wanted to come volunteer and be a part of the networking, et cetera. So yeah, that's it. VailComedyFestival.com. I haven't said it enough. We're also on Instagram. Like, I should say right that. I'm not on social media really. I have a Twitter account, The Mark Masters, but I don't really use it. And I don't like Facebook, which owns Instagram. So I don't like Instagram. And I've never been on either. Facebook's been around 20 plus years, never had an account. But for the comedy festival, there's a social media team, and I create almost all the content. So we went 30 days. We released a video clip on Instagram and a reel every single day for 30 days. And we've grown I think we have over 500 followers now from zero, which I'm pretty excited about. We've done some cool things in the social media space. That's taken a lot of work, a lot of energy, put together that content, and hopefully it translates to some ticket sales. But please follow Vail Comedy Festival on Instagram. On Twitter, it's Vail Comedy Fest. Facebook.com/Vail Comedy Festival. And we have a new YouTube channel. Once we get to 200 subscribers, we can get a vanity URL. Right now we have 21, and that's a public number, so you can go look and see how high we are. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. I think if you just Google YouTube Vail Comedy Festival, you'll find it. Or check this out, Adam. If you go to VailComedyFestival.com, maybe you've heard of it. There is a little YouTube icon on there, and you can click that icon and click the subscribe button.
Oh, quick link. I like that. Yeah. And well, I guarantee as soon as we're done, I'm going to do that because, nice. Yeah, I like,
you're going to do what?
Go subscribe to Vail Comedy Festival on YouTube.
Awesome. And how are you going to find that link, Adam?
I think, well, someone was telling me that there's this website. I forget what it's called, but I'll just Google Vail. No, it's vailcomedyfestival.com, of course.
Yes. We did it, everybody. I think we hit our 10. I don't know for sure, but
we got to 10.
I think so.
Well, what's interesting about, you know, you mentioned, obviously, this isn't the first comedy festival, and it's not the first industry to do a festival. But for me, you know, different festivals that I've gone to, whether they be related to, you know, let's just say, like, I work in software, you know, I'm like you, I don't pay the bills as a podcaster full time just yet. But, you know, there's the conferences that I've been to in other realms, there's, you know, obviously a focus on the subject matter. So, you know, people coming to a comedy festival, I would expect to, you know, if I'm coming to this comedy festival, I want to see comedians and I want to see them laugh. But are there going to be other events there? I know you talked about like performers, but are there going to be like Q&As with people with,
industry panels? Exactly. We're hoping to have those. I don't want to promise them yet. Right now we're 1 month away from the festival. If we have, like, for example, we have some people with some pretty serious TV experience who are going to be at the festival who happen to be comedians. So like a panel on how do I get my first TV gig would be great. We have a possible former NFL player coming to the festival, as well as an ESPN personality. So a sports entertainment panel would be perfect for that. So we're definitely hoping for that. We also, this is very exciting, Mike Glazer, who's a comedian in Los Angeles and a big influencer in the cannabis industry, which isn't something I know a lot about, but he's big in that world. He just got accepted into the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is a huge honor over across the pond. He's going to be, I think the way that festival works is you do an hour show like every night for 30 nights in a row. And so he might run his hour during the festival. So that's an example of another kind of thing that you'll be able to see. We also, if you have kids or you're family oriented, Rocket Fizz is a business that is sponsoring the Vail Comedy Festival. You can see their logo on vailcomedyfestival.com, by the way. And we're going to have a special stage just for family events called the Rocket Fizz Stage in Sunbird Park in Vail, Colorado. And we're going to do things like Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, who was on Animal Planet for 11 years. He's a veterinarian and a hilarious stand-up comedian. Here's a fun fact about him. This will age him a little bit. He has been on a show with Bob Hope. How cool is that?
Yeah. I know
who Bob Hope is. That is awesome. That's so cool. He is so funny. He's the best. And so he has this like animal facts, like trivia thing for kids and all that. Everything on the Rocket Fizz stage is going to be free and open to the public. You don't need your credentials, your pass or anything like that. We'll have magic shows there. And we're working on right now getting Echo, who is the new canine dog. I don't know if that's redundant saying canine dog.
Canine dog,
yeah. The canine dog for the Vail Police Department. So a working dog may make an appearance at the Vail Comedy Festival as well. So maybe be careful what you bring with you to that event.
Well, what would this dog be doing? I mean, it's not performing.
I think the dog's handler will answer questions. And, there'll be a lot of kids asking, this looks like the best job ever. I get to play with a dog all the time. How do I become this? How do I get this job? Looking cute.
Yeah. I'm imagining just a dog on a stage. All you're doing is just standing in there looking cute and entertaining the crowd. But that's really cool. Yeah. I think that, you know, for me, that's part of the joy that I get of going to different festivals. For me, one that actually comes to mind now in particular is a music festival in Michigan called Electric Forest, which I've only been to once, but it's an electronic music festival, and what it's like a when I went, it was a 3-day festival. But what was cool about it was that, you know, it was a creative space. Obviously, you were there to listen to music and have a good time, but there was also opportunities just to like go do yoga in the woods in Michigan.
Another thing we're going to do. We have a whole wellness track for the comics. So we're partnering with Lululemon, and we're going to have a run, have a yoga session, a meditation session. There's all kinds of things. I can't even remember them all, but they'll be on BaleComedyFestival.com eventually.
Lululemon. I always pronounce it wrong as Lululemon, and I always get admonished about it. But it's that's a
good word, Adam. I feel like I said I didn't remember anything from the last recording, but I do remember now that you used a great vocabulary word. Admonished is this episode's word. This episode is brought to you by the word admonished, everybody.
And BaleComedyFestival.com.
Yes. We will add the word admonished somewhere on there. We'll hide it. And if you find it, send an email. You can find it. There's a public email on BaleComedyShow.com, which a lot of people have been finding to reach the festival. If you find the word admonished, and you're one of the first 4 or 5 people, we'll give you 10% off your festival pass or something like that. We'll hook you up.
Yeah.
Glad we won't admonish you.
Yeah.
We'll hook you up.
I'm glad we could throw that in there.
Do you remember what the last word was by any chance?
Apocryphal.
Oh yeah. I still don't know what that means. Apocryphal, everybody. It sounds apocryphal that I can't remember it.
It sounds apocryphal, but don't admonish me if I can't remember it.
Only do A words? I think you have like a dictionary of how to sound smart.com, the book, and you've only gotten through the A's. Next decade, you can do the B's and the C's.
Exactly. I'm going in alphabetical order.
Quick quiz. What is agoraphobia?
Oh, that's the fear of being social, I think.
Maybe. Yeah. So A's. You got the A words. You're good on the A words.
We're kind of coming up on time, and I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad we've been able to talk about this, and I'm really looking forward to a lot of the work that you do, because it is so positive, and you're just such a positive guy, and I think that's so important for comedy, and you know, for me, from just an outside perspective, like comedy is supposed to be satirical. So comedy is supposed to kind of just like say the things that maybe we're too afraid to say at times. But I feel like the work that you're doing is positive. And like we said before, you know, your approach to helping other comedians is something I really support. And so I just want to say thank you for being that voice and doing a lot of this work, because obviously your passion shines through. And and that's the whole point of this show is celebrating everybody's passion. But I want to know one more thing. And it's, what gets you excited about your work? And what has kept you motivated in the work that you do in those rough spots when you're filling a 7-minute gig and absolutely no one is laughing? Like what after quite a few years, or at least a couple of years of doing this, what still keeps you motivated to do this?
Well, I mean, it's the successes, you know, like the week before I was at Comedy Works in downtown Denver, and I did a 3-minute spot and I did well. Objectively, I did very well. Some people came up to me, they were surprised at how well I did, and that feels good. You know, they'd seen me be bad before, and now they were seeing me be good. And those, you know, one of the jokes I told, I won't say what it's about, but it uses some big vocabulary words. I will say that. So next, if you ever see me live, ask me to tell that joke and I'll tell it. And I've been working on that joke for like 2.5 years. I just took notes about it for a long time. And then about a year into taking notes about it, I started trying the material. And it's expanded and expanded and expanded. I'm super proud of it. It's really it's fun for me to tell that joke on stage. I didn't tell it during that 7-minute set. Maybe I should have. It's when the material works, because the thing that I always say is when you like work a cubicle job or a regular traditional corporate job, you have a boss, you have a middle manager, there's a committee. You know, if you release something, like 25 people might have touched that thing. And that can be frustrating because it doesn't always come out the way you hope. And it also limits the upside of your pride in that work because it was a big team effort. So you can be proud of the team, but it's not necessarily you. When you're a comedian, you are literally in the spotlight and the only person on stage and the only person who has worked on this material this entire time leading up to that. You might have bombed with that material for years. And finally, you get it to connect with an audience and you get a big reaction. And that is so rewarding that it powers me through sleeping in my car and putting up with all the indignities. You'll understand that word when you get to the I section of the chapter to go along with being a road comic. So veilcomedyfestival.com, by the way.
You know, yeah, thank you. Yeah. Well, Mark, like always, this has just been an absolute pleasure to have you back on this show. And again, thank you, for just providing laughter and joy, especially even when some people might not be in their seats rolling with laughter. I think everyone appreciates a good positive attitude like the one that you have. So I hope to have you get on this show sometime. But Mark, we'll just talk again later.
Yeah, thanks for everything you do. This is a great podcast, very professionally run. I'm really excited to have an opportunity to be on it again. And good luck with all your pursuits. Be careful out there base jumping. You haven't read the B section of the dictionary, so I'm worried. I'm worried about the base jumping.
That's going to be a wrap for this episode of the It Matters to Me podcast with my guest, Mark Masters, author, comedian, host of the Veil Comedy Show and organizer of Veil Comedy Festival. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to this year's festival going on from May 27th to May 29th, as well as anything else that came up during our conversation. And also, if you have a minute and you enjoyed this episode and the podcast overall so far, please consider leaving a review and sharing it with a friend. It really helps get this podcast out there. And if there's someone you think I should have on the show, please let me know by writing an email to adam@itmatterstomepodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and until the next one, this is Adam Casey, signing off.